I hated swimming so much when I was young. The water was cold, it was green. I hated everything about it, to be honest.
Was there any point during those 2 years where you were like, I'm done, or that wasn't the case at all?
Well, when I was very close to that moment, my green card got approved. So I was like, okay, I'll go back to the US again and give it one more shot. I've literally invested my whole life in swimming. I know I'm there and I know I'm good enough to be in that final. Like how you get treated by your coach completely changes after you go pro, especially if you're not American. I was young, I was just, I'd say achieving my longtime dream, going to the Olympics. The crowd was insane. I love learning from the best, and I try to put myself in a position to be surrounded by those kind of people.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Abdal, a podcast series from the National News dedicated to Arab athletes and their respective journeys towards the Paris 2024 Olympics. I'm your host, Rima Boulel, and today I'm joined by Egyptian distance swimmer Marwan El-Amesh, who is getting ready to compete in his third Olympic Games this summer. Since he first moved to the United States over 12 years ago to study and swim at the University of South Carolina, Marwan has gone to extreme lengths to not only sustain, but consistently develop his career as a swimmer. He has scoured all corners of the earth in search of the best training conditions, all with the firm belief in the idea that surrounding oneself by greatness provides the ultimate learning environment he needs to achieve greatness himself. From South Carolina to Indiana, South Africa to Turkey, Italy to California, Marwan has relocated multiple times in search of elite coaching and world-class company in the pool. Now, at 30 years of age, he is in the form of his life, clocking career best times and hoping to make history for his country by becoming the first Egyptian to secure a place in a swimming final at the Olympics. Marwan talks about how he went from being a young teen in Alexandria who hated swimming to becoming one of the best distance swimmers in the world with an immense passion for his sport that has taken him all across the globe. Please join us for this insightful conversation about doing whatever it takes to keep one's sporting dream alive. Marwan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're actually 12 time zones apart. It's like noon, like 11 in the morning for you, 11 p.m. for me. So I'm very happy that we managed to coordinate and make this happen. Thanks so much. And tell me, what are you doing in California? Like, I know that you were in Indiana for a long time. So what took you to California?
Well, it started actually last year in the summer. I had the TIA Pro Series. I'm sure you know what those meets are.
So it's a professional series of swim meets.
So yeah, they usually have like six or seven per year. It's through USA Swimming. And it's international since a lot of international swimmers swim there. But mostly Europeans are not able to compete because it's a bit too far. But anyways, I was swimming my usual 200, 400, 800, 1500 events. And then after my, I think it was the 800, I won. I had my in-season best. And then the first guy I saw after my race was Mark Schubert. Who is the best? I can confidently say, like, he's the best distance coach on this planet. And for him to come to me and then to like analyze my race and tell me how like impressed he was and everything, that really gave me a lot of confidence. And I don't know what is it. I felt very connected with him as a coach. And it's something, maybe it's a bit different topic, but like when you go a pro here in the US, it's really, really hard to find a coach that really cares about you. Cause after you're done with like your, collegiate career, you're on your own. Like the how you get treated, like how you get treated by your coach completely changes after you go pro, especially if you're not American, because you don't really add much as a benefit to them anymore, because they basically see you as points. I know it's like harsh to say, but that's the truth. So yeah.
So like you're saying, just to explain to people, so when you're swimming for university, like you did for South Carolina and Indiana, when you have a certain number of years of eligibility, right? And then when you're done with that, exactly. You can still train with the team, but kind of nothing is in it for them. Is that what you're saying?
Also, not anyone can train with the team. If you have a good connection or like good relationship with the coach, he'll let you train with them. But obviously, in return, you have to like help his team to get better. You know, he's not just going to let you train there just because. Which is something I struggled with after 2017. But like, I don't want to change topics too much. So yeah, after that race, he came to me. He's like, "Hey, you did this, you did that. You need to do this to get better." And obviously, with someone like him who coached literally the best distance athletes on this planet, like Usain Al-Luli, or there's so many names. I don't want to like forget anyone. But yeah, I felt special. For the first time in a while after like, you know, competing in college and all that. And then, yeah. And then, it was mainly him. He's just like texting me every day after that. He's like, "Hey, how's training been? How are you doing?" All that. And then, I knew I was going to train, like swim for him at some point. I just knew it. I didn't know when it was going to happen or, and all that, but then yeah, eventually he's like, "Hey, I want to, I'm making like I'm making a distance group and I'm recruiting some of the best distance swimmers, and I would love to have you on the team." And yeah, it was a no-brainer. I had to take the chance. You know, if someone who's been following my career, I always try to surround myself with the best in the swimming, you know. So like I swam in South Carolina. I'm done with South Carolina. I lived in South Africa for 2 years. I went to Turkey with Energy Standards. If anyone has been following them, they were the best swim team in the world as well. And then from Turkey, I went to Indiana, California, and then I've been to Italy and some other places as well. So it's, I love learning from the best, and I try to put myself in a position to be surrounded by those kind of people.
Exactly. I feel that if I needed to tell someone your story in a sentence, I would say that you do whatever it takes to get the best possible training and be around the best possible people, which is not an easy thing to do because it requires a lot of sacrifice and traveling, and which I'm going to get to, because you summarized what we're going to talk about in detail coming up.
I mean, exactly. Like I've been living in my suitcase since I was 18, and I just turned 30 today. So, or like not today, but like, yeah. I just turned 30. So,
but like, yeah. Does it, when you made this last move, we're going to go back to all the moves you've made, but when you made this last move, obviously the motivation is there, like you said, because he's a legendary coach. So it was kind of a no-brainer, like you said, but does it take its toll from a different side in terms of just the moving, all of that, or does it actually energize you?
When I was younger, it did. But as you get older, it's like, you know, the decision gets harder and harder, especially now I have like two huge dogs that I had to travel with for like 36 hours in my car. But no, I mean, once you settle in, it's good to be somewhere new, because also like, if anyone know anything about Indiana, it's like always cloudy. The weather is not the best. And from someone who's from Egypt, you know, I'm used to like good weather. And
you're from Alexandria, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you live by the beach.
Yeah. Well, yeah, close. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, Indiana did a lot for me, and I'm really thankful for that. Not taking anything away from that, but you know, it was time for a change after 6-7 years not seeing the sun. I'm happy to be here and training with some people that I really enjoy learning from.
Who are some of the people you're with?
So there's three U.S. national teamers, like I think Michael Brinegar, David Johnson, Will, and then you have Ahmed Afnawi. It's not like huge. Like, I mean, there's obviously more people swimming with us, but it's not like a big team, but, it's like, it's enough for some, like for someone like me. I don't like swimming with like seven people in the lane. I mean, I did my time. I swam with 15, 16. I did my time, but now it's time to like focus on quality and like not have so many people, in my way to swim my practice the way I want to swim it.
So for a lot of people, they would think that because swimming is so individual, it's you, the pool, and your time, right? I'm wondering if you can explain why is it beneficial for you to be with a strong group of swimmers? Like what are the kind of stuff that you can pick up from them, or what do they do for your own training?
See, that's something I've learned, that not everyone likes to do it that way, but... some of the best, like if you look at the finalists and at the Olympics or the world champs, all of them for some reason like to train alone, which is something I find it very interesting because I really like to be surrounded by a team. I really like to someone to push me every day because let's say I don't have like my best day tomorrow, but David will have his best day tomorrow, so he's gonna push me to have my best day tomorrow. And it's just the cycle goes around, like everyone's not going to have his best day and then someone's pushing him. So we're just consistently getting better every day, which for me is like very, very important. Just like having a team that most importantly, like I like, and that just like is fun to train with. For example, like Chad Leclo, when I was in South Carolina, this guy is the most fun person to like train with. Like, I don't care if the practice is 10K, 11K, 12K, he'll somehow make it fun. I mean, he's not the best trainer. Like, he's not like super fast in practice, but he makes it fun for sure. So yeah, for me, this is very important. And like having, obviously having like some of the best athletes to train with is a motivation every day for sure.
I'll take you back and let's go actually to the beginning. You grew up in Alexandria. You and your brothers all swim. I'm curious, did your parents swim as well, or does it run in the family? How did you get into it?
No, really. I hated swimming so much when I was young. The water was cold. It was green. I hated everything about it, to be honest. But I just, they just made me go to practice every day. And then even like at the very beginning, it wasn't very easy because like, let's say age 10 to 15, I was not getting any better. I wasn't even swimming my events now. I was doing like backstroke and fly. And I think at age 15, it's when I started improving. And I just started taking swimming more seriously. And most important for me, it was fun. It was fun for me to go to practice every day.
And distance swimming is... I mean, I think all swimming is tough, but like the choice of distance, how did you end up finding your lane in that?
See, this is something I take pride in, that throughout my career, I'm the one who like try to learn from everyone and then I guide myself. I've never had a coach since I was, let's say, 16 who has with me like the whole time through, you know. I don't think I've had a coach more than 2 years. And it's something... was out of my control because like when I started in Alexandria, like you said, our club was very famous with getting American coaches. And for us at the time, we knew nothing about swimming, literally zero. So just because he was American, in our head, he was better than an Egyptian coach, you know? Even though nowadays, like if you go through his resume or something, he was just a normal coach. And some of them are not even allowed to train or coach in the US, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we had like, because usually foreign coaches don't survive longer than a year in Egypt. So I've had like two American coaches in Egypt, and then I traveled to South Carolina, swam there for like 3 years, and then after I qualified for the Olympics on my junior year, I think I was 20 at the time, I decided to take a year off and fly to SA, lived there for 2 years. And then after that, I came back to Indiana. So, you know, it's just the whole thing. Like, I've always been going somewhere, training with someone. Or not someone, but like someone that I trust and I know he's good for me. So, yeah.
So let's start with South Carolina. When you were in Egypt, were you getting recruited, or were you the one just looking for scholarships? And so how did that come about?
Yeah, at the time, it wasn't really common like nowadays, where you just go to the US and swim and study, and you know, it wasn't as easy because there was very, very few people that made it. I think I can only name someone or two people that actually went there and they succeeded in doing both at the same time. So it was just like it was a gamble. I like, we were just, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it, because I would just send emails to a bunch of schools. I have no idea like where those schools are. I had no idea where South Carolina was on the map. You know, it was just, even some schools, I would send them and they were like, oh, we don't have a men's team. Because, you know, I just wanted to go there and swim and study. I didn't like, you know, we had no background about college swimming or nothing, zero. So, South Carolina, they emailed me back. They're like, hey, we can offer you this much. Are you interested? And then that's where it started. And even South Carolina, when I went there, it wasn't like, it was a D1 school, obviously, but it wasn't like something, it wasn't like top 5 or top 10. You know, even until now, like they weren't, but when I went there, I actually helped them to like recruit some swimmers. And that way we had a really, really good distance team at the time. And obviously we had a very good coach too. But he wasn't there like my first year. He came in my junior year. That's when his name is Mark Bernardino. He's the guy who helped me to qualify to the Olympics in 2016. So yeah, after that, I took, like I said, I took a gap year to focus on swimming, just swimming. And I lived.
But when you went to South Carolina, was it? I would assume, and it's a completely different environment to anything you'd ever seen. I'm just wondering, what was the transition like for you? Was it difficult? First of all, swimming and studying. What degree were you pursuing, and just like how did you transition into that? How did you acclimate?
So at the time, I don't know, I can't remember much, but at the time I was so ready to just try something new and get out of the environment I was in, you know, because I was mostly training by myself and it's not something I enjoy. But yeah, I was just ready to leave. I was ready to try something new. And like I said, I had no idea where South Carolina was. Like, because I remember the very first day in the US was in New York. I went there for like 5 days. It was nice and everything. And then I flew to South Carolina. And then I was like, where am I? Like, I'm just out of nowhere trying something new by myself. I was 18 at the time. But I was very excited. Like, it wasn't, obviously I was shocked a bit, but it wasn't something that was going to like be in my way of doing what I wanted. So yeah, at first I tried civil engineering, but then after the first semester, I was like, I told my mom, I was like, hey, I'm either going to focus on swimming or just study engineering, but I'll just do enough to maintain my scholarship and that's it. I'll just swim for 4 years and that's it. But I really, really enjoyed swimming and I really loved the sport. Which I still studied, or I finished my degree in political science. But I wasn't going to be able to do both engineering and swimming.
So you you go to South Carolina and then you qualify for your first Olympics. Was that something that you expected, that you were working really hard for? Was that came out of, how did that come about?
Well, obviously, like the goal of this like sport is the Olympics. Like, I mean, it's an Olympic sport, so what's the number one goal is the Olympics, whether to qualify or make finals or obviously win. So, yeah, it was something in my mind the whole time. And it's something I really wanted to achieve. Also, I wanted to achieve it the way where you qualify for the A cut, if you know the difference. Because if you go back to our in history, like in Egyptian swimming, like in 08 or 2012, it was more of I wouldn't say qualifying, because they would just like pick a male and a female to just represent the country in the 50 freestyle. But qualifying with the A cut, you have to be now in this Olympics. This is the hardest one to qualify ever in the history of the Olympics. You have to be top 12 from the Olympics before, but usually it's like top 12, 14. But yeah. So obviously, my goal was to get the A cut at some point.
So for people who don't know, there's an A Olympic standard and a B Olympic standard, and A is the one you should get to guarantee a spot. And then when they used to fill up they fill up the field first, and then if there are any empty spots, they would give them to the B. That's how it works, or how does it work?
Yeah, you that was the perfect explanation. The only thing I would add is there's no chance for you to qualify if you get the B cut.
Because at the moment, especially.
Yeah, right? It's just it's not gonna happen. Because the sport has been so much faster, and it's not slowing down. It's just getting faster and faster each year, and that's why they make it top 12 this year for this Olympics. And it's extremely hard to it's just, I would say it's challenging to qualify for this one. And but anyways, going back to South Carolina, that was my goal. And then, but I remember it was like a tier pro series. And back then, I think they used to call it Grand Prix, if someone has been following those. But anyways, my goal then was to qualify for the 2015 World Champs. And then I remember the first day I swim prelims, I go best time by like 2 seconds. And then at night, I just qualified for the Olympics. I didn't even know what the time was, because I was someone who went from like 151 to 147 in like one season, which is at the time like 147 in 2013. That was top eight at the time. After doing that, I was like, hey, maybe I should take swimming more seriously. And then I just decided to move to South Africa. I mean, I was talking to a few people. Like, I was talking to the head coach in Spain at the time. I was talking to Greg Jackson, who was the head coach of Australian swimming at the time. And then, obviously, Graham Hill at South Africa. But it was so much easier for me to travel to South Africa, since it was, I wouldn't say it's close to Egypt, but like, you know, it's still in Africa, closer. And then the visa stuff was so much easier, obviously, for me too.
Yeah. And then, so you were training, so that was before Rio 2016, which was your first Olympics. You're actually going to your third, inshallah, in Paris. This will be your third Olympics. So before Rio, you go to South Africa. What was it like? Because I think I saw, I'm not sure, I was doing a lot of research, so everything's a bit muddled up right now, but I think I saw the pool that you were swimming in. What was your, can you talk to me about that? Because I know you had a good time there and it was really good for you, but like the initial reaction, you were in Durban, right?
Durban, South Africa, yeah. That was my base, because we actually traveled so much during that year, which made it even more fun. But yeah, I was based in Durban. You know, it kind of reminded me of when I first moved to the US. Because at first I went to New York, like I said, and then I go to South Carolina and I'm like, what am I doing here? And it was the exact same thing. But you know, the difference is I was there. I had Chad Letlow in the lane next to me. I had Miles Brown, Calvin Justice, so many more names. I don't want to miss anyone. But like, yeah, the group made it fun. And that pool, if someone ever seen it, it produced a lot of Olympic champions. So it's not really about the pools. It's really about, I would say, the team, the coach, obviously. Also, something I've learned a lot from, noticed is when you train in like not the best pool, and then you get to race in some of the best pools in the world, it's a good feeling. You feel so much faster too.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, tell me, what are some of your standout memories from Rio? Like,
it was the best Olympics ever. It was like the best ever.
How come?
I was 20 at the time, I think. 20, 21. I was young. I was just, you know, I'd say achieving my long-time dream, going to the Olympics. The crowd was insane. I like when you said that question, it's just I went back and with my memory to that moment. It's awesome. You go in there, even through like the calling room, you can it was like a soccer game. You can hear the people like yelling and cheering. And you know, people usually ask us like if you hear someone cheering on you. Usually I say no, but that one moment, during that Olympics, you can just hear it the whole time. And I was only talking about Olympics. I'm talking about like the prelims, not even finals. So it was really loud. It was exciting. Obviously, I was a bit nervous, but it was just, I don't know. For me, it was like the best, one of the best experiences ever I've been to.
And did it go the way you thought it would go in terms of swimming results?
I don't know if someone watched the 400 freestyle from the Olympics in prelims. I was under the world record up until like the 250 mark. And if you ask me how this happened or what was going on, I have no clue. I was just excited. I went for it. Obviously, I wanted to make the finals. I was like maybe, I think, a second short. But again, I went best times. I was, I think top 13. Did I lose you? Sorry. Yeah, I was top 13 or top 15 at the Olympics. Went best times. I don't know. Everything went my way. Everything went the way I wanted to. Maybe the only thing that I wanted to achieve that I didn't was making semis in the 50 in the 200. Because at the time I was more of a middle distance swimmer. I was not a distance swimmer, and I think I barely missed that one too. But overall, it was a great experience. And like I said, it was my favorite Olympics so far.
So you finished that and you decide to go to Indiana after, right? Am I right with the timeline? It's kind of
correct. No, so, that's perfect.
So why did decide to go to Indiana and what was that like there?
Well, to be 100% transparent, the coach of South Carolina did not really like my move to South Africa. So he was like, yeah, if you want to come back, you have to pay full tuition. So I was like, okay, that's fine. So I started talking to schools that are top 5, top 10 in the U.S. And Indiana was top 5 at the time. And they offered me even more money than I had in South Carolina. So I was like, that's a win-win for me. You know, I mean, the only downside is I have to live in Indiana. But but it was fine. It was actually good for my swimming. And it was a no-brainer as well for me to like take that offer.
2017, at World Champs. I think you were a whisker away from the final.
I'm always there. I'm always 9th, 17th. You know, I'm always...
What's that about? Do you like, so for people to know, like top 8 you go to a final, top 16 you go to a semi, but obviously in the distance, the longer the race, they don't even do semis. You have to be top 8 straight away. So in the 400 free at Worlds in 2017, you're 9th and you're really close. I have it written down somewhere how far you were. I think it was really nothing. 0.2.
Yeah, and the funny thing is the guy who was 8th was my training partner as well. At Indiana, Zane Gorthy. He swims for the US. So yeah, I'm always there. But you know, it motivates me. It motivates me to go back to training and be in that final. I mean, I've been there before, but the goal is to make finals, and then once you go to finals, everything is possible. And I'm sure everyone knows that.
Yeah. So when you, I think we touched on that earlier, but I want you to talk a little bit more about that, is when you graduate, when you go to the States on a scholarship and everything, and then you graduate, you need to figure out a plan, right? And you said that you're not sure. So was that a tricky period for you? I know you also had some issues waiting for a green card, or I don't know. There was a lot of different things. So if you would just want to try and explain how tricky it is that if you want to choose to become a professional swimmer and stay doing that, what do you need for that to happen?
That's the thing. You're literally on your own. You just, like I mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast, like after you're done your 4 or 5 years of eligibility, you're on your own. Luckily for me, my coach offered me a fifth year just to like cover my expenses for another year, which kind of gave me another year to think what I really wanted to do, whether stay in the US or go somewhere else. So yeah, you need to figure out things your own if you want to stay in the sport, because no one's going to help you unless you're an Olympic champion or a world champion. You're literally on your own. So yeah, at the time we just, I was like, okay, I've done my time in the US. My visa is about to be done. So I go back again where I just reach out to like world-class coaches that know how to coach my events. So at the time, there was Energy Standard in Turkey. The head coach
Which
at the time
was a swim team?
Yes. Yeah. It was the best swim club at the time. Mm-hmm. The head coach was James Gibson. I'm sure a lot of people know him too. I just reached out for him. I was like, hey, my name is Marwan. I swim those events. Those are my times. What can I do to swim for you? And then he's like, hey, we would love to have you. And then he just offered me to do like a trial for 2 weeks. And it would be up to him to like decide if they would like want to keep me or not. And then actually after my third day, he's like, hey, I think you'd be a good fit for us. We'd love to have you, all that. And then my trial was actually, it was not a trial anymore. I just ended up staying there for 2 years almost. So yeah.
Was that 2018? Sorry, just for the time, that was 2018, 2019 kind of? That's kind of the range?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And you had Chad with you at Energy Standard as well, Chad Leclos?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, literally any big name you can think of was swimming there at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I remember. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I remember you told me that those 2 years in a previous interview we did, that those 2 years you were around amazing people and learning so much, but you said that they were the worst years for you swimming wise.
Oh, swimming-wise, they were horrible.
But why? Can you tell? Try and explain why.
I think the main thing is they had a concept where you can't stay there for more than 3 weeks because they just try to break the routine. They don't want you to see the same people every day. So the way they did it, they just you stay in Turkey for 3 weeks, and then a week you just. They send you somewhere to train. I think that was not very beneficial for me because I like to stay somewhere, and because I'm already living in my suitcase, and that made it even worse. I'm just like, you know, going everywhere. Like even for that week, I'm trying to find someone to train, whether I go to Italy, France, just keep looking, and you know, somewhere in Europe to stay at. So like, again, I learned so much. Like I was literally surrounded by the best athletes and coaches, and not just distance, like sprint, mid distance, all other strokes, you know, that I learned so much from that. But for my own swimming, it wasn't there.
So how do you, like, you're traveling, you're putting in so much effort, how do you stay motivated? Was there any point during those 2 years where you were like, I'm done, or that wasn't the case at all?
Well, when I was very close to that moment, my green card got approved. So I was like, okay, I'll go back to the US again and give it one more shot. Try to qualify for 2021 or 2020 at the time, because there was no COVID at the time. So I go back, I try to qualify. I remember it was like, I only had like 3 more months to qualify. And on my third month, I go to that meet. I do not get the time. And then the next day, literally next day, COVID happens. Everything shut down. So I was like, okay, I guess this is it, you know. It's nothing I can control, but because at the time we weren't even sure how life is going to come back normally or not. Not even thinking about the Olympics. Like the Olympics was our least concern, you know. But yeah, I stay there.
So that kind of gave you, in a way, an extra year to, because you had it. So when COVID hit, you didn't have a qualifying time for Tokyo, right?
Nope.
That's what you're saying. Yeah. So it gave you an extra year. And obviously there was a time when there wasn't anything happening at all. But I guess when everything restarted, is that it gave you a chance to make it, right?
It did. I mean, COVID helped me make 2021 Olympic Games. I mean, it didn't help me, but like it gave me one more chance. But at the same time, I did not touch the water for like 5-6 months. We did nothing, you know, other than just like going to the lake, training there. But yeah, I remember going back. Like my coach was so obsessed. He, in his mind, that the Olympics was going to happen on time. And obviously, we all knew that was not going to happen. So he made us go to the lakes. Anywhere there's water, he would just send us do something every day. Just do something. And I was not convinced with what I was doing. I was just like, okay, I'll just keep going through the motions, see what happens. And then when we started training properly in August, I was actually training really well. And I was like, okay, maybe give it one more chance. So I think it was sometime November. I go there, I swim there. After, I don't know, a year, I go best times in 4 years or something. And I go best times in distance. Like that was, I wasn't really a distance swimmer at the time, but it's when I started like focusing more on distance. And I made the Olympics with the A cut in November, and that was it.
So you, when you spoke about Rio, you lit up, and you're talking about the crowd. You go to Tokyo, and it's probably completely different experience. And I think a lot of people don't realize, especially in a sport like swimming, but almost any sport, competing at that level, which is the pinnacle, it's the Olympics, but there's no fans. What was that like? How different was it? How weird was Tokyo?
I remember, I think it was my 800 or something, and someone yells my name, and then there's echo. Like, you know, that's how bad it was. It was just, it felt like I was swimming in like some random local meet in Alexandria. You know, it was just, it didn't feel the same. It's just, it's the Olympics. I mean, Japan was super nice. Tokyo was nice, obviously, but it was not it for me. It was weird.
Did that affect your results, or you were able to perform? What was it like?
I mean, maybe it was just it didn't feel right. I don't think I hit my taper right, because I remember during that summer I was training really, really well, and the times I went to Tokyo were not, they were good, but I was almost going the same times in season week after week at the Tier Pro Series. So I think that had a major effect. Plus, I don't think I hit my taper right, because remember at the time I was just really
new. Can you explain to people what a taper is?
So taper, it's basically just when you start going down in volume and intensity. And it's obviously different for each athlete, whether you're a sprinter, distance, even if both swimmers are distance swimmers, they both, like, each one tapers in a different way. And same goes for sprinters or anyone.
So you kind of decrease the volume of training in the build-up to an event.
Yes, I think I did go down a bit too much, because remember, it was my first Olympics as a distance swimmer. And it was just my first season as a distance swimmer in general.
So you were more in really the before 200, 400, and then you became more 400, 800, 1500, right? That's
correct. Kind of more of 800, 1500, yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, usually when you're at that level of distance swimming, you don't really need to taper much. I was just like, I guess I was training as a distance swimmer, but I tapered as a mid-distance swimmer, if that makes sense. So it was just a learning experience. And I still went to the Olympics. I still achieved something for the second time that I always wanted to. It was a great experience overall.
I know that I had spoken to a lot of the Egyptian athletes during Tokyo and after, and kind of the reaction from the public to some of the results, like, there was so much expectation. In general, that's kind of how it is in Egypt, is that when the Olympics come around, they just want you to win medals without knowing much about you or anything. And because social media obviously is now, like, it's, I would assume that even by 2021, the kind of the cyber bullying is probably a lot more than how it even was in 2016, because it keeps getting worse. And I'm wondering, did you experience that? Were you subjected to that?
You know, like in Rio, I was better at ignoring those things. But like when you, in 2021, it was different, because it felt like we were targeted, or like it's like someone told them to like focus just on us and just say the worst things that was possibly could be said, you know. And I don't know, it's sad. Like everyone who's like bored can just name an Instagram name or like a Twitter page that, I don't know, says Egypt Sports or whatever. And then the way they write the like their articles is so like, it's so biased, because like if you, let's say you train or you swim for like the biggest swim club in Egypt, they will never ever like say something bad. If
there's a loyalty towards the club, you're like, you're an Ahly fan or a Malik fan, you're not gonna
I compete, I have like the highest finish at World Champs for Egypt or at the Olympics, they would say I failed to make finals. If someone else who swims for, let's say, whatever, like a big club, they'll either say he achieved the 40th place with a new Egyptian record, you know, or they just ignore it, like he never went to that meet. So it's not fair. It's something I actually never spoke. Like I always wanted to like say something about, but I just never had the chance to. But it is what it is, I guess. People also don't know like how much swimming is, like how much it takes for me to like qualify with the A standard. Like I said, with the funding you're provided with too. I mean. I'm not here to like criticize the funding or anything, but I'm just saying it's an individual sport. There is not that much money into it. And you're 80% or 90% on what everything you're doing, it's on your own. And then when you, after all that and you achieve all that, you get that kind of response from the public. And I mean, and in my opinion, I don't think the public is, or like those people are the reason. It's just the way the person that decided to make those kind of articles on social media, or the way they write things, it's just, they know how to make it to like get more views or clicks or whatever, and make people like comment saying, oh, we shouldn't have went, or whatever they're saying, you know? So yeah, it's very sad.
I'm curious, do you work with a sports psychologist at all, or did you ever be like get to a point where there are certain things I need to deal with and I need help in that way, or even just for performance reasons? Can you talk a bit about that?
It was only like literally, I think three times. It was when I was, it was right before COVID, when I was in, when I had like, I don't know, two more chances to qualify for Tokyo. And she did help me a lot, I think, at the time. It was more of a life coach. But then COVID happens, and then I stopped doing that. Maybe it's a good idea to go back or do something similar, but it wasn't, I can't say it was something that took a big or a major play in my like swimming career so far.
Okay. So you have qualified for a third time, 800 and 1500, right? Both
Correct.
Races you've qualified. Correct. And actually you qualified as soon as the window opened to qualify. Like
first
it
day.
Started in March and then like literally I was just about to start paying attention and okay, the Olympic qualification window has started and boom, you qualify, which is amazing. Did you surprise yourself? How much of a relief is it that it's a completely different scenario to Tokyo? It's like well in advance you're sorted.
Yeah. So this is inshallah going to be my third Olympics. And I know how stressful it is to like postpone the qualifying until the last minute. Even if you're like as an athlete, you can be capable of doing those times. But the stress with the time makes it so much worse. And I told myself, I'm not going to get myself into this again. You know, in Rio, also, if you remember in Rio, it was something similar. It wasn't like at the very first day, like we did it now, but it was like at the very, very beginning of the qualifying window. So, yeah, I mean, but again, I wasn't going to get those times. I was just going to, because I was training really well and I knew I was capable of doing something like good, maybe swim best times or something. Because right before I swam short course in Australia at World Champs, and I was seventh, I think. Mm-hmm. And I swam, I think I was in the top 20 best performance ever in the 800. And my time was one of, I think it was top 16 best performance ever in that event. So I knew I was in a very good shape. I knew I was capable of swimming best times, whether it's long course or short course. And I think the meet was in January, February. I can't remember exactly. In Florida when we first qualified.
The Fort Lauderdale. I think it was beginning of March.
March? Nope. I can't even remember. But
I think so. Like indeed. Just for timeline reasons, because this is important, because you're doing, that was a period where you kept just doing really, really well, is that even in the World Cup series, you got a gold, you won your first ever gold in a World Cup, right? Like in Berlin, that was before before going to the World Short Course Championships in Melbourne. So that was towards the end of 2022. What did that mean for you, first of all, to get that? And I know like World Cups are different and everything, but it must mean a lot to you to be able to get that.
Well, for us as Egyptians, we've never had an Egyptian win gold at the World Cups before. Whether, even like whether that's like I mean, obviously, you can't compare the World Cup with World Champs. It's two different events, totally two different events. But
they're
just
like a series, right? Like it's another way to race, and they're short course usually, right? Are they all short course or
It's Olympic year, it's long course. If it's just like a normal year, it's short course. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you want to like put the events in order, obviously the Olympics is number one, World Champs, and then everything else, whether it's Mediterranean Games, African Games, World Cups, they're all, pro tier series, they're all in the same level of competition, I would say. We've never had an Egyptian win a World Cup before, so it was big for us, big for me, obviously.
But then you go to the World Championship in Melbourne, you get seventh, and you're right, your time was like top 20 of all time in the 800 free.
And that was only like less than 2 seconds from third. It was good. And also, for anyone who's new to distance swimming, in the 800, there was in that specific World Champs, there was no prelims and finals. So, and my time was not, the time that I was entered with was not fast enough for me to swim straight to finals. So I swam this time in the morning, not in the evening. I mean, and obviously if it's better and you swim so much faster if you swim in the finals.
Because everyone around you is faster, right? That's why.
I swam in prelims. I had no one next to me. I was just, especially with a distance like 800, you need someone to be next to you to like help you with the pace and all that, at least for me. So, yeah, I mean, I wish I had the opportunity to swim in the finals, but I still did really good. I swam a really good time in prelims, which was good enough to be seventh overall.
So, you this year, or 2023, you qualify for the Olympics early, and then you go to World Champs in Japan, and you get 10th, if I'm not mistaken, in the 800, and you broke Ahmed Akram's national record. So can you talk a little bit about, you also came ninth, I think, in the 1500, right? I did my homework. I mean, so, you were waiting for me to point that out.
I'm almost there. I'm almost ninth. And if you look back too, I missed both finals by half a second. And half a second in 1500 and 800, that's literally nothing.
That is nothing.
So that was a bit disappointing, but
you're still swimming best times. No,
exactly. I'm swimming best times. I'm swimming also like distance swimming now is so competitive. I don't know, like if someone really has been following swimming, like distance swimming now is like at its peak. If someone's been following it now, like, you get to see world records being broken every, I don't know, 3-4 months. And like the field is so stacked, like Olympic champions didn't make finals in the 1500 at the last World Champs because it's so tight. Like there is no room for mistakes, even in prelims. Because if you mess up, you're done. I don't know. I don't want to say it's like a 50 now because like, in the 50, you can't like mess around in the morning because if you do, then you're out. Now it's becoming more and more a thing now in distance swimming because if you don't, if you're not on your A game in the prelims, you're out. It doesn't matter who you are, you know. And yeah, again, once you make finals, I think everything is possible.
So, what do you think? I don't know. How do you look at it from a psychological perspective? The whole like finishing ninth, finishing 10th, just for you personally, what do you think is the difference? Like, is it that big of a difference? Or in your mind, how do you view it? And how much confidence do you have that you will hopefully in Paris be able to be part of those top eight?
I know I'm there. Like, I know I'm there. And I know I'm good enough to be in that final. It's just I have to learn from my mistakes and know what I need to do to be just this much better in the prelims. That's all I need because I know in finals when times come, I'll be ready to go.
So you're 30 now, and you're swimming best times, which I don't think that's not something easy. In a lot of sports in general, the age is going up and everything. But for you, did you expect to be 30 and still being able to sustain a career in swimming and actually swim your best times?
If I go back in time, I would say no. But now, if you ask me that question, if I didn't expect it, I wouldn't still be swimming, you know? Because I'm in the sport to perform at that specific level. And I like we spoke about the whole thing, like in the podcast, like I've literally invested my whole life in swimming. So yeah, I really believe I can do something special for myself, my country, and my family. And yeah, I'm really excited for Paris.
So when you look back, we just literally did a summary of all the travel and all these different, like you've lived in 6-7 different countries and traveled all over the world. And like you said, living out of a suitcase and everything. When you look back at all these, do you see them as sacrifices, first of all? And second of all, do you feel it's been worth it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, if it's like you're not going to achieve something special if you're not willing to risk something or sacrifice something. And it's not for everyone. Like not everyone wants to sacrifice this much to achieve that much. But for me, it's worth it, of course. It's something I always wanted to do since I was young. And also, like, if you think about it, outside swimming, I also learned so much from the sport, not just in my swimming itself. And for later on in my career, like I said, I invested so much time and effort to be surrounded by the best in the sport and to learn from them. And the plan is after I'm done, I'll be able to teach the next generations of Egyptians and what swimming is really about and how to achieve those things in Egypt without even having to travel. Because like the amount of resources we have in Egypt, it's insane. Like if I tell someone here how many swimming pools or we have, they just don't believe me, you know? I really think we're capable of achieving so much more in like in Egyptian swimming. With the talent we have, we really need to like rethink about the ways we do and just teach them the proper way and just the whole mentality thing. Like in Egypt, it needs to be I don't know how to say it, like
reworked,
redone, or yeah, remake or whatever.
But like, can you give me an example of, because you said you've learned the sport has taught you a lot for even away from swimming. What do you think are some of like the biggest lessons that you took to heart from your journey so far?
Well, maybe, I don't know, not everything goes the way you want it in life, I guess. That would be a very simple lesson. Because when you were young, 2018, 21, 22, things are going almost your way. You just, you know, every time you're going best times. I know it's a very simple example, but like, yeah, just everything's going your way. You don't need to think too much about outside swimming. But the older you get, you have more responsibilities. And also, obviously, things don't go your way all the time. So you have to figure out a way to like overcome those things, you know.
Mm-hmm. You said that distance swimming right now is faster than it's ever been, and it's so competitive. Obviously, Tunisian Ahmed Hefnawi has done some crazy things since Tokyo till now, and Worlds this year as well. So Tokyo, he wins the 400 free from lane 8. It's the third time in the history of the entire Olympics that a swimmer has won a race from lane 8. You have been training with him for almost over a year, I would say, probably from end of 2022 or something, or like fall of 2022.
Yeah, it's almost 2 years now, yeah.
So can you tell me, he's 21, you're 30, What's it been like having him around? And what has it done for your swimming?
You know, he just sometimes, or most of the time, he just makes me feel younger. Because whether it's in the swimming pool or outside, just the way, like you said, I'm 30, he's 21. There's a big gap. But he's like my younger brother. I really enjoy training with him. And like I said, he makes me feel younger. Like we, just the way we train, the times we're going, I do things that I've never done in my life before. And it helps him and myself at the same time.
Are you the only just, two Arabs training together? Are there other Arabs in the group?
Well, actually, my brother is a coach here too. So we're three, I guess.
When Ahmed did what he did, because you swam that event, I think you were 14th in the 400 free in Tokyo, and you saw what he did, what was your reaction? I'm curious.
It's insane. It's insane. And like I said, it shows how everything is possible once you get to that final. Because if you go throughout the history of swimming, and especially at the Olympics, there is no, like, you can never say this guy's going to win it. At the Olympics, the pressure is so high. Even the times, if you notice, are a bit slower because it's more about winning, not just going best times. So yeah, once you get that final, everything is possible. And I mean, Ahmed showed the whole world that it is, everything is possible once you get to that final. And yeah, in prelims, like I think the difference between 16th and 8th was like not even a second. So you just, like I said, you have to be on your A game in the morning to make finals because no one is safe.
Yeah. So I would, there's a question that I ask most of my guests on the podcast. What would make Paris 2024 a successful Olympics in your eyes for you? What is the standard that you're putting for yourself or just anything, even if it's not a time, but just what would make you walk away from Paris feeling that it was a success for you?
Well, first of all, we've never had an Egyptian qualify to three Olympics with the A cut. So that's already for me a success. But obviously, I'm not there just to like represent my country because we're there, like I said, we're qualifying with the A times. We're not just there to like swim and leave. We obviously are competing. And if you think about it, we've never had an Egyptian in an Olympic final ever in history. So we'll see how it goes. I'm doing everything possible to represent Egypt in the best way possible. And like I said, I'm really excited and I really enjoy the group I'm training with. So yeah, I'll do everything possible for me to be in that final and we'll see how it goes.
Well, good luck and thank you so much. It took a lot of your time, but I loved our conversation. And
no, thank you
I
so
hope
much.
That people, I hope that people try and understand. Just for swimmers, and like, there's obviously all sports are hard, and being an elite athlete is hard. But when it comes to seconds and milliseconds, and the amount of training and the taper, like you said, it has to go right and everything. I think it's quite a complex process, and you're now managed to go to a third Olympics, inshallah, in this next summer. So I'm looking forward to see how you go.
Yeah. Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Marwan has been knocking on the door of that elusive final for many years. Will he finally make it? Keep an eye out for him this summer in Paris to find out. Thank you for joining us and stay tuned for a brand new episode of Abdal next week.